fans. This is Molly welcoming you back to Season 2 of Mysteries About True Histories. Get ready for more math, more history, and of course, more mysteries.
Ow! My hand is cramping!
Don't hold the eraser so tightly.
Remind me why you volunteered for us to spend hours erasing doodles and... what did Mr. Avogadro call it?
Marginalia. A fancy word for notes written in the margin of a book.
Right. Why did you volunteer us to erase doodles and marginalia from Mr. Avogadro's English textbooks?
Because he offered extra credit for doing basically nothing. It was a no-brainer. Duh.
But there are so many doodles and margin thingies.
Do you doodle in your textbooks?
Me? Pfft. Of course. I'm a master doodler.
So there you have it. Multiply your doodles by however many other students doodle in their textbooks. And this is what you get. A stack of doodle-filled books.
Fair enough. But a master doodler doesn't doodle this much. You've got to pick your spots. There's a doodle on almost every page here.
Right, but that's an exception. The one I'm doing now is about average.
Lucky you.
Flipping through 10 pages, there are two doodles. That's an average of one doodle per 5 pages, or 0.2 doodles per page.
I see where you're going with this. On average, how many doodles are there per textbook?
There are 230 pages in each textbook and 0.2 doodles per page. To figure out how many doodles there are per page on average, we multiply 230 by 0.2.
Or you could divide 230 by 5, since 0.2 equals 2 over 10, which reduces to 1/5, and 230 times 1/5 is 230 over 5.
Great thinking, Max.
Why, thank you.
Lucky for us, I have a nifty trick to help us solve the problem.
Yeah? What is it?
We're solving for 230 over 5, right?
Yeah.
Well, whenever you divide a number by 5, you can multiply that number by 2 instead. Then move the decimal point one place to the left.
Say that again?
What's 230 times 2?
Easy. 460.
Which is like saying 460.0.
Okay.
Now, move the decimal one place to the left.
460, move the decimal to the left one place, gives you 46.
That's the answer to 230 divided by 5.
Seriously?
Check it on the calculator.
Whoa! And this 5 trick works for any number?
Sure. What you do is take 10 and divide it by the divisor.
Whoa. Slow down, Mathnasium. Divide it by the divisor? What does that even mean?
In a division problem, there's the dividend, the divisor, and the quotient. The dividend is the number that's being divided. The divisor is the number the dividend is being divided by. And the quotient is the answer.
Okay. So in our doodle problem, the dividend was 230, the divisor was 5, and the quotient was 46?
Right.
Great. I'm with you for now.
When it comes to our trick for any division problem, if you divide 10 by the divisor, then multiply that number by the dividend, then take that answer and move the decimal one place to the left, you'll get the quotient.
In other words, you take one division problem and turn it into two. Plus now, there's division and multiplication. I thought tricks were supposed to make math easier, not harder.
Oh, Max. It's just a tool to use in case you need it. For instance, what's 110 divided by 4? Use the trick.
Okay, so the divisor is 4. If we divide 10 by 4, you get 2.5 or 2.5. Now we multiply 2.5 times 110. 2 times 110 equals 220. Plus 0.5 times 110, which equals, 55. 220 plus 55 equals 275. Move the decimal one place to the left, 27.5.
Let me double check. Yep, 27.5.
Holy moly, you're right. That wasn't so hard.
See?
Now, all we need is a trick to erase these doodles. How much extra credit are we getting for this again?
Listen, it wasn't just the extra credit I was after. I have an ulterior motive.
Ulterior motive? What is it?
An ulterior motive is a purpose that's intentionally hidden. Sort of like a secret secondary reason for doing something.
No, I know what an ulterior motive is. I meant, what is your ulterior motive?
Oh. I wanted to get closer to Mr. Avogadro to figure out if he's a pog, or a mole, or both.
Ah, good thinking, Maul. Wait a sec. Maul? Mole? Holy moly, Molly! You're not a mole, are you? Maul?
You're the only one who calls me Maul. You tell me.
Yes?
You think I'm a mole?
I meant, yes, you are not a mole.
Congratulations on figuring that out.
Thanks. On the other hand, I'm not so sure about Mr. Avogadro.
Exactly. Remember when we overheard him talking with Mr. Zimmer in the parking lot? Mr. Zimmer gave Avogadro notes that he put in his briefcase. And this was right after someone named Avogadro stole Nostradamus' notes in 16th century France. If we could find those notes, we could find out if Mr. Avogadro is indeed a mole.
Indeed. You said he put them in his briefcase. Look, his briefcase is sitting right there on his desk.
I know.
You know?
I saw it the moment we walked in.
Then what are we waiting for?
Max, wait.
What?
We can't just snoop in a teacher's briefcase.
Why not? Last year we broke into Conklin's office.
But we knew Conklin was a troll. Avogadro is only a suspected mole.
Right. Okay, what do we know about Avogadro?
He had that suspicious conversation with Mr. Zimmer, and he may come from a long line of moles, and... oh no.
What?
I knew the name Avogadro sounded familiar. In chemistry, there's Avogadro's law, named after Italian physicist Amedeo Avogadro. It says that if the temperature and pressure is the same, equal volumes of gases have an equal number of molecules.
Okay.
This discovery led to the creation of a unit to measure large numbers of atoms and molecules called Avogadro's number. Avogadro's number is also known as one mole.
All right, that's it. I'm opening the briefcase. We need to know if this guy's a mole. Let's see. Worksheets, lesson plans, papers. What did I get? A C minus? Oh, come on.
Looks like that extra credit will come in handy.
Uh-huh.
Anything suspicious?
Other than a C minus on a B plus essay? No.
Looking for something, Max?
Mr. Avogadro? Hi, I was just...
looking for more erasers. We're almost out.
Of course. Bottom right-hand drawer of my desk.
Where else would they be? Duh.
Found them.
It's funny. I was halfway to my book club when I realized I left the book we're reading in my briefcase. Thanks for keeping it safe, Max.
My pleasure.
Well, I better get going. I don't want to show up late and have to face the wrath of an angry book club. once again, I appreciate you both volunteering to de-graffiti my textbooks. As you can see, it's a lot of work. Bye now.
Phew, that was close.
I don't know. I think he's on to us. Mostly you.
Maybe. Maybe not.
So what do you think? We didn't find anything. Does that mean Mr. A isn't a mole?
I'd say he's been downgraded from prime suspect to person of interest. Anyways, back to work.
Whoa, check out the note in this textbook.
Problem solvers. Problem solvers?
It's from Aunt M.
We discovered a POG signal transmitted out of Burlington Bunker in Corsham, England. Please investigate immediately.
But how? How is it in the book? How would she know about the extra credit?
Aren't we past trying to figure out how Aunt M sends us secret messages?
One day, I'm gonna make her tell us her secrets.
Good luck with that. Anyway, what's Burlington Bunker?
I'll tell you on the way.
Okay, now that we're in England, can you tell me about Burlington Bunker? First off, what is it? Second, if we're in Corsham, why is it called Burlington Bunker?
That's because Burlington Bunker was a secret underground city built beneath Corsham in the 1950s as a massive bomb shelter for government officials in case of nuclear war.
Oh! Yeah, that's not super scary.
Nope, not at all. But the bunker is actually super cool. It's kind of like a 1950s time capsule, with offices, a hospital, a television studio, and even an underground lake for fresh water.
That is super cool. So why call it Burlington?
That was one of its code names, and the name that's most commonly used today.
How on brand for the moles to send a signal from a secret underground city.
True. But wait, I thought Aunt Em said the Pogs were sending the signal.
Pogs, moles, they're all working together, right? I just thought it would make more sense for the moles to operate underground.
I guess. I gotta say, I'm a little confused. What's the difference between a pog and a mole?
Is that the setup to a joke?
No, I'm serious.
Well, as I understand it, the pogs are power hungry. Their goal is world domination. They use moles to burrow into institutions and send back information on how to take them over.
Gotcha. So the moles are kind of like the pogs' worker bees.
Sure. But they're moles, not bees.
They're kind of like secret agents.
Did someone say secret agent?
Yikes! Who are you?
The name's Blonde. Ames Blonde.
Don't you mean James Bond?
No, never. The character James Bond is based on me, Ames Blonde. I am a real-life spy, not some phony Hollywood creation.
Sorry. Someone get this guy a license to chill.
You must be Max and Molly. Your Aunt Murgatroyd contacted me to escort you into Burlington Bunker.
Great! I was wondering how we were going to get into a secret bunker.
Follow me. We'll take the stairs.
Stairs? What? Hey, there's an entrance sign for the bunker right there.
I thought it was a secret.
It was until it was decommissioned in 2004. Watch your step. Here is the phone exchange. It was the second largest in England at the time it was built.
Whoa. It's like a bunch of giant ancient computers, but no phones.
There aren't any. Each terminal is a switchboard. Operators would use headsets to receive incoming calls, then patch them into the number requested using a cord.
Okay, but I don't see any headsets or cords either.
That's because there's no use, lad. The technology is outdated.
So how are the Pogs sending their signal?
We believe they've hidden a transmitter somewhere inside an outdated switchboard.
Wow, hiding a transmitter inside a decommissioned bomb shelter is pretty ingenious.
I'd say. So where's the transmitter?
Listen.
I don't hear anything.
Therein lies the problem. The transmissions come at random times for random lengths of time. There's one.
That sounded like Morse code. Just like on the Titanic.
Indeed. The problem isn't the transmissions themselves, it's capturing them. The bunker doesn't have a reliable power source, so our tracker runs on batteries. If we leave it in, it can only capture a handful of transmissions before it dies.
I wonder if there's a way to calibrate the tracker to only turn on when there's a transmission. That way, it would save its battery life.
But how could we calibrate the tracker when the transmissions come at random times?
Maybe they're not so random. Other than the Morse code, what can we record about the transmissions?
Well, there's the time between each transmission.
And the length of the transmission itself.
Right. Let's bunker down and see if we can find a pattern. Okay, that makes 5. Max, what was the time between each transmission?
Between 1 and 2, 24 minutes. Between 2 and 3, 5 minutes. Between 3 and 4, 12 minutes. And between 4 and 5, 7 minutes.
Ames, what was the length of each transmission?
4.5 seconds, 3 seconds, 2.5 seconds, 1.5 seconds, and 2.5 seconds.
Okay, so if we write them all out, we get a 4.5 second transmission followed by a 24 minute interval, a 3 second transmission followed by a 5 minute interval, a 2.5 second transmission followed by a 12 minute interval, a 1.5 second transmission followed by a 7 minute interval, and a 3.5 second transmission.
24 minutes is 320 times longer than 4.5 seconds.
What if we strictly look at the numbers, not the units?
Interesting idea. 4.5 goes into 24, 5.333 times?
4.5 times 24 is 108.
But the relation between these two numbers would need to match the next two. A 3-second transmission followed by a 5-minute interval.
I wouldn't even know where to start.
Where to start? That's it!
What?
What if we look for a pattern starting with the interval and then the transmission?
Okay. That means we'd skip the 4.5-second transmission and start with the 24-minute interval, followed by the 3-second transmission. The rest of the numbers are 5 minutes, 2.5 seconds, 12 minutes, 1.5 seconds, and 7 minutes, 3.5 seconds.
Okay. So for two of the pairs, if you divide the first number by 2, you get the second number. 5 minutes and 2.5 seconds. 7 minutes and 3.5 seconds. I wonder if there's something there.
But how does that fit for the other numbers, like 24 minutes and 3 seconds? That interval would need to be 6 minutes for... Hold it.
What?
The pattern works when the interval is one digit. So what if we converted it?
How?
By adding the digits together.
So for a 24-minute interval, that would be 2 plus 4, which equals 6.
Divided by 2 equals 3. 3 seconds!
The only other pair to try is 12 minutes and 1.5 seconds.
1 plus 2 equals 3, divided by 2, equals 1.5.
We found the pattern!
Smashing. Now we program the tracker to turn on only for the length of the transmissions. And we wait.
Hold on. That's it?
Well, yes. The pogs are transmitting in Morse code, likely one number or letter at a time. We need to collect the transmissions, then decrypt them.
Wonderful. Mission sorta accomplished. Once again, a problem with a solution, but no clear answer.
I'm just glad to be back in Oshkosh. The bunker was making me claustrophobic.
Ow! What was that?
A paper airplane. It just flew through the window.
And right into my head.
Of course. It's another message from Aunt Em.
We're still decrypting the Morse code, but we were able to decipher location data from the Burlington bunker signal. The transmission was being sent to Oshkosh.
Oshkosh?
Oh my gosh.
This episode of Mysteries About True Histories was written by Dan Gold and voiced by Dexter Danger Mayo, Molly Smith, Sheila Morris, Adam Tex Davis, Chris Okawa, and Jonathan Regeer. Original music by Brian Suarez. Our associate producer is Max Kamaski. Technical direction and sound design by Josh Hahn. Mysteries About True Histories was created and produced by Adam Tex Davis and Jerry Kolber and is an Atomic Audio production.